CliffCentral.com.
We'd give you a treat for today, and we'd get Adrian Basson on to join us. Adrian, of course, is with News 24, editor of the publication or two there. I mean, how many publications are you actually running at News 24 at the moment, Adrian?
Hi, Gareth. No, News 24 is the main one, and then under the News 24 umbrella, we've obviously got Fin 24, Sport 24, and some other lifestyle sites.
Yeah, but I mean, you were editor of the Bild for the longest time.
Yes. No, I moved off the Afrikaans publications in April last year. So I'm fully on News 24 since May last year.
Well, before we get into any of the news stories, I mean, it's interesting how the media world is changing. And I'm sure you saw what Trump had to say about BuzzFeed and CNN yesterday at his press conference. But a company like NASPAS, at least they're smart enough to realize that digital is the way to go. And that does mean bad news for some of their older publications and for some of the, you know, sort of the print stuff. But digital stuff is growing in leaps and bounds. Mabali was asking earlier, how do we even know anymore? How does anybody know what news to trust these days? Because so much of it is opinion, and so much of it isn't based on any good journalistic practices. So much of it isn't researched very well. Help us with this.
I think it's a very good, I mean, you make a very good point. So the industry is definitely in flux, and there is a transition from print to digital. And I think the print format for decades had some kind of integrity or trust around the format, the fact that it was ink and paper, you know. There's kind of a feeling of longevity, or you know, you couldn't really make spelling errors on the front page, that kind of thing. But that is changing, and I think initially people were skeptical of the digital media, whether it will have the same kind of depth, integrity, and credibility. And that's our challenge, because as you say, people will quickly move away from you if they realize you're not a trusted source. I still believe in old school journalistic values. So I believe that news reporting should be that. It should be facts, and it should have, comments from all the parties involved. And when you do opinion, it should be clearly marked as that. So when you write a column, it should be clearly indicated as such. So I think what's happening in the States is really at the next level, where the president-elect is attacking some, you know, very established news houses like CNN. We also saw the emergence of this publication called Breitbart during the elections, which is really like a right-wing ideology-driven news outlet. That was quite scary. It's not fake news. It's not made up stories, but it's like a clearly ideologically driven angle to every single story. So I guess the options will increase for readers, and readers will have to decide for themselves. But that's really our challenge, is to remain a new source of integrity with substance and not to make mistakes.
All right, going into, I believe you guys are credible, not only credible, but you publish a lot of interesting stuff. I was looking at an article of yours just from the other day where you looked at the difficulties that Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma will have if she does run, which is probably very likely at this stage. It's her and Cyril Ramaphosa. And you broke down four reasons why she isn't going to have the easiest entry in or certainty of win.
Yeah. Look, Gareth, it's early in the year. It's only January, and there's still, you know, 12 months between now and the ANC conference, or just over 11 months. But we're already seeing the emergence of these names of the so-called slates in the ANC. And even though the ANC is trying to quash the debates around names, it's impossible. We live in a democratic era where people have access to information, and they will discuss names. So the basis of my argument was the following, that inside the ANC's national conference, how this works is that every voting delegate has a vote, and these delegates come from the provinces. And the provinces with more branches gets more delegates. So, for example, if you look at the ANC in 2012 in Mangaung, KwaZulu-Natal had an enormous amount of branches, much more than other big provinces. Mm-hmm. And that swung the scale in Jacob Zuma's favor. So the provinces who are better organized at grassroots level and who's got branches registered, you know, will win the day. It's quite a basic calculation to do. So irrespective of what non-voting organizations or bodies like USATU says, they are going to struggle to swing the vote. So I looked at Nkosi Ronald Dlamini's backers at this stage, and as I said, things can still change, but at this stage it looks to me like she is the so-called Zuma camp's candidate, and that camp will include the Women's League, the Youth League, and the Premier League provinces, which are Mpumalanga, the Free State, the Northwest, and definitely the largest chunk of KwaZulu-Natal. And if she has those backers behind her, she's going to win. The issues that she's going to face, these are not always very savory people. So the issues she faces is, how will she be beholden to them? We've got people here like Ace Magashule, who's really perfected state capture or then provincial capture for many years in the Free State. What will she have to give them? What will the promises have to be? And what will be the role of the Gupta family who are close to this camp as well? So that was my first headache I identified for her, is that, how much of her own person will she be allowed to be? She's apparently quite sensitive about the fact that she doesn't want to be seen as the candidate for the, let's call it the bad guys in the ANC. Because Zana Dlamini Zuma herself doesn't have massive corruption scandals hanging over her head, but she's obviously the ex-wife of President Jacob Zuma.
Now,
this
is an interesting point, because I saw, I think it was Huffington Post, go in with the whole idea that, you shouldn't call her his ex-wife. Like there was some kind of sexism implicit in this, which is ridiculous. It smacks of a little bit of fake news, if you ask me. But let's just look at her, for example. She is a woman who was very firmly in Thabo Mbeki's camp. Mm. In fact, she left cabinet and joined the AU when he was unseated in Polokwane all those years ago. She's definitely of his school. She was, at university with him. She has a similar take on politics. In very many ways, it would be more of an Mbeki administration than it would be a continuation of the Zuma one. But the fact is that she would get the blessing of her ex-husband, and she would end up taking over a lot of the reins of power that he's left in place, which would include these things that you've already mentioned, the Premier League.
Yeah.
And by reins of power, I mean also conduits of power, because sometimes the power comes from, the bottom up rather than the top down.
Yeah.
You agree?
I think you're right. So she, if you remember well, in 2007, she was actually on the slate with Mbeki in Polokwane.
Right.
That lost the day to Zuma. And just on the issue of the ex-wife or the ex-husband, she's not just the ex-wife of Jacob Zuma, but I would strongly argue that it's very relevant in this context that she is his ex-wife, and they have four kids together. And one of the things that you hear when you speak to ANC people in a bar, outside of press conferences, is that they will tell you that, Jacob Zuma really doesn't want to go to prison, and he believes that she won't send him there because of their relationship. So, it does become very relevant, I would argue, that they have kids together. I think there is a certain kind of bond between adults, even though they are separated.
I mean, poor old,
kids together.
Poor old Hillary Clinton couldn't shake the fact that she was Bill's current wife. And similarly, anywhere else in the world, wherever there's trouble for the one spouse, the other one gets into trouble by implication, even if they are divorced.
Yeah. So I agree with you on that. I do think she's obviously much more. So, she's not just the ex-wife, and that's, the Africa Union position was obviously very senior. But she does also I also see her as a super bureaucrat. She does portray herself as a super bureaucrat. Just the words that come to mind are boring and technocratic and long-winded and not very exciting. So, her speeches are very much kind of,
With all due respect to those people who want an entertainer, we've had that for the last couple of years.
But that's exactly the point. No, but that's exactly where I was going. Is maybe we need some boring in this country.
Yeah, I think we need someone who gets things done.
Exactly what we need is someone who understands what the state needs to do, which is deliver services. That's it.
Right.
Build houses, build hospitals, fix the education system, don't buy nuclear. Fix the farms, etc. So look, she could be a very good president if she's that, if she's a technocrat who's kind of boring and doing things her way, and doing the right things.
Unfortunately, that's not how the ANC works. The ANC is highly politicized. The ANC, to a large extent, is captured, a certain faction of the ANC by the Gupta family. We've seen the influence of the family in Tuli Madonsela's report. And those are the people who's going to back her. Those are the people, if they go to conference today, who will vote her into power. And they're not just going to tell her, oh, Nkosazana, just, you know, govern clean and just
do your thing.
Country.
Get rid of us. That's not going to happen.
No, it's not. So, I mean, and that was what was one of the other of the four headaches. That was another one which I identified is what to do with Jacob Zuma, because he might very well face corruption charges again. Later this year, the Supreme Court of Appeal will rule on the so-called spy tabs matter, where the, you will remember the North Gauteng High Court last year ruled that the decision to drop the charges against Zuma were invalid. So that's obviously the Sheikh trial charges, the corrupt relationship with Sheikh and the arms deal. So if the Supreme Court of Appeal agrees with the North Gauteng High Court, you know, the NPA has to decide again whether to charge him or not. And if Sean Abrams decides not to charge him, he will have to come up with a very good reason this time, because the previous time, Mokotedim, she had a very bad reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, by that time, because of Zainab Lamini Zuma may be ANC president, you know, and the problem she faces, as the point I made, is there's no way she can promise him that he will never be prosecuted, but she can at least try to appoint a pliable director of public prosecutions who won't charge the former president. Or there could be some informal deal made. But legally, our constitution does not allow that. The other problem, Gareth, I think that she will face is the ANC's electoral decline. I think it's pretty obvious that a very big reason of the ANC's, very poor results in last year's local government elections was the fact that Jacob Zuma is the president and what he has done. Even though it wasn't a national election, I do think people like Parks Tau, who was voted out as mayor of Johannesburg, was a victim of Jacob Zuma's very poor term as president.
Yes.
And all the scandals that surrounded him. So how is she going to convince ANC voters or former ANC voters who have now voted DA or EFF or have not voted to come back to the party if she's got these hangers on by the likes of Ace Magashule, Didi Mabuza, Colin Maine from the Youth League, Batabile Dlamini, who apparently doesn't drink. And, you know, these are the kind of, these are the kind of issues he's going to have, because I think there's a very strong argument to be made that someone like Cyril Ramaphosa may probably save the party's face in that regard, that he may be able to get back some of the ANC voters who's gone DA or hasn't voted, just because of who he is, his stature in business, you know, where he comes from and the things he's been saying he wants to do. And lastly, the fourth headache was really what to do about Ramaphosa if she wins.
Right.
Because Ramaphosa made this big decision in 2012 to come back into politics as Jacob Zuma's deputy. He's definitely got his eye on the job. He wouldn't have taken a deputy job if he didn't want to be president. So what does she tell him when he loses? And the huge risk I identify is Ramaphosa leaving the ANC with his supporters, the people who are opposed to Zuma, to the Zuma camp at this moment. That must cause her some sleepless nights.
Yeah, it's not as easy as everybody thought, because she was the, you know, she's kind of the anointed. And if for no other reason than the fact that the president's hoping she'll keep him out of jail. But if that's the only reason for her to take the job from his point of view, that's also a very bad reason.
Exactly. She must be. She needs a serious bout of moral authority or moral power from somewhere. She needs, you know, kind of veterans to stand up and endorse her.
Or maybe the ANC needs to accept that this, all of this, is precisely what is deserved for a party that's in quite serious decline.
Indeed, but someone has to be appointed, you know, and you know, I mean, the ANC is in serious trouble after last year's election, and I think they realize that change is needed, but maybe that's not the entire ANC. Maybe there are already two ANCs, and maybe this conference will just expedite a eventual split.
All right. I know you've got yesterday was the first day of school, so you've got to drop kids at school just now. It doesn't stop for fathers and mothers all over South Africa. That's actually the biggest news story of the week. But what are you looking forward to this year in terms of things that you're going to be watching very closely? I know that you have many things on your agenda, but what kinds of things can you share with us now? I mean, it's only the first or second week of Jan for most people.
Yeah, look, Karen, I think this year is going to be, I've mentioned the spy tapes case. So that case, after many years, will come to fruition this year, where the ANC, where the NPA has to decide about the charges against Zuma. So that's very big. We're going to watch the Office of the Public Protector very closely, because Busisiwe Mkhwebane has clearly got a idea of what's expected of her, and it looks like that her main agenda is to be not like Thuli Madonsela and try and be different. So we're going to have to watch that office closely, because Madonsela turned it into such a powerful moral force in government. So that's something we'll be watching closely. Mm-hmm. The fallout in the criminal justice system is continuing. You've got another top cop who is allegedly paid, got money from dodgy places to pay for his house. So unfortunately, things at the SAPS aren't looking bright. And then we've got universities. I think we're reaching a point now where everybody's, realizing we can't have these long protests, fees must fall protests every year. We've got WITS going into deficit this year for the first time. So what's the future of our universities? And that's a debate I really want to kind of stimulate on these 24. We've started something called Project Rise, where I encourage people to write and contribute about what they think the universities or the state of higher education should be. What should a decolonized university look like? Who should fund higher education if fees must fall? Those kind of issues, I think, will become very pertinent in the year to come. And then the courts will be busy. There will be all kinds of cases, not least the axe murderer or the alleged axe murderer from Stellenbosch.
Yes, Henry van Breda. You know, Mabali and I have been following this story very, very closely, and it worried us that there was so little action around it, because it's such a gruesome, it's such a gruesome, horrible story. It seems there's only one suspect. And
I think the poor police, the tough time after all the failed cases they've recently been involved in, like the Shireen Devani case, and also some of the criticism leveled against them in the Oscar Pistorius trial. So they definitely took their time, some would say much longer than they should have, to arrest van Breda. But that goes to trial early this year. So that's going to be one of those, I would say, high-profile court cases where the public will probably want to know every little bit of what happened. That's some of the big stories that comes to mind.
Just on the issue of the universities, we're going to be speaking to Professor Cheryl Delaray next week. Mm. I'm not sure it'll be a pre-recorded interview, but I'll let you know when, because she's the rector of the University of Pretoria.
Yes.
Out of all the universities, I think the University of Pretoria seems to have handled their student protests probably the best. They restored some order fairly quickly there, and they seem to have a plan for the academic year. So I'm going to be speaking to her, and you might glean something useful from that. All right, thanks, Adrian. Always good to talk to you. And best of luck with the school run this morning.
Thank you. Have fun.
It's important. Done well. All right, cheers. There we go.
Bye-bye.
All right, Adrian Besson, News 24. Always useful and interesting to talk to him. And in this case, fascinating article that he wrote that you can check out on News 24 about Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, the person that everyone is going to be talking about a lot more this year. Cliffcentral.com.